Hello everybody and welcome to The Integrated Home, the podcast that's produced by the Home Integration Community for the Home Integration Community. My name is Jeff Hayward and we're here at the Cedia Tech and Business Summit in London in front of a live audience to talk lighting. We're in good company to do that with James Ratcliffe from Homeplay, Dan Hughes from Lutron, Vanessa Macedo of John Cullen Lighting, and Dan Griffiths from the Lighting Industry Association. Welcome to The Integrated Home. So before we get into the detail of this chat and why lighting design matters, I'm going to ask you first to introduce who you are and your business briefly. James, do you want to go first?
James from Homeplay. I've been selling speakers since I was 14 years old and lights since, for about 10 years now, something like that. And then I've got a business based in Surrey called Homeplay.
So I'm Dan Hughes. I've worked at Lutron for about 4 years and I look after the residential business for London and the Southeast.
I'm Vanessa. I'm an associate lighting designer at John Cullen. I've been working there for 2.5 years now. And yeah, we are a manufacturer and a lighting consultancy.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dan Griffiths. So I work for the Lighting Industry Association. So we're an association made up of 205 member companies that are manufacturers of lighting products. Personally, I work on standards, regulations, all the, you know, the real fun stuff, as well as a background in light design and product design.
Fantastic. And first question, James, what typically drives lighting design decisions in high-end residential?
The interior, I'd say. Architectural features, that sort of thing. We got into selling lighting design through selling lighting control, which is kind of a bit backwards. If you're trying to sell lighting control and you've only got a grid of downlights in the ceiling, then you've really just got a fancy remote control dimmer. You know, there's not a lot of value there. But if you've got a beautiful lighting scheme with multiple circuits that need tying together, then there's value in having a lighting control system. So I think our industry has come into doing lighting from the wrong end, quite honestly. So yeah, maybe you, Vanessa, you can add to that.
What do you think about that, Vanessa?
Yeah, it comes a bit like you said, it comes from the design in itself of the space, obviously. We still have from our end a lot of clients that like the traditional way of doing things. But when you have what now is very common, the open plan space type kitchen, living, dining room, it becomes pretty much impossible to have it on a traditional switching. And you do need to go into having a control system, mainly because you don't want to have 18 dimmer switches on your walls. I call them the DJ table. Nobody's going to be tuning lights at that point, and it just becomes a waste of a lighting designer scheme by not having a control system. For us, it kind of works in tandem, and is a conversation that we always have to kind of have with a client.
And Dan, we talked earlier before this chat about your background in commercial lighting design. So for a room like this, we're talking a totally different world in residential.
So I said earlier on, we were talking briefly, it's probably hard from the commercial world to go to the residential because it's so different. Particularly commercial, we normally got standards, guidelines, ceiling types that we might be limited to, spacings, but it still needs forms of control. So I think a lot of us in the lighting industry, a client will ask us to do something, and we kind of always look to our left or right to the controls coming to like, is that possible? Can we do that? Does that work for you? What do I need to do? So I think both paths kind of work. So with a similar background, I got into light design first and ended up getting into commissioning because lo and behold, someone's got a light and design goes, this doesn't quite work. And you go, oh, it should. And you go fix it.
And that, Dan, is one of the issues, isn't it? That these decisions are being made by lots of people in terms of high-end residential, what the lighting looks like. So presumably within the group of people who might be involved, electrician, interior designer, client even, you might have a few non-specialists, let's say. So is that an issue, do you think?
Typically. So as you said, it could be a plethora of people that are involved in these decisions, from interior designer, architect, and depending on the project itself, and that could be size, scale of the project, monetary value or investment. It depends who's going to drive and define that. Unfortunately, unless you've got a big scheme of a big investment, they may not see or bring in the specialisms required, and therefore it's left out in the ether a bit, and someone needs to grab that by the horns and drive it. So bringing the correct specialisms in, like an integrator that can help, or a lighting designer that can help define both the aesthetic lighting design, let's call it, so the way it functions in the space, but also the control of that is pivotal to making sure the lighting is right for the right task at the right time.
So, James, you want to get on a hobby horse here and say, this should be the role of the CDU integrator.
Oh, yeah, so a lot of the time, most projects that we work on don't have a lighting designer, or most projects where we're successful don't have a lighting designer. There's normally an architect, an electrician, an interior designer, and a client, and no one has talked to the client about the design of the lighting. It's normally just a grid of down lights, and that's that. And through demonstration, we're lucky enough to have a beautiful showroom with some amazing lighting in it. Very few people see that and decide that they don't want it. When you talk to them about, okay, well, who's got the skill set to deliver this for you? It's generally not the electrician. It's generally not the architect. A lot of the time, the interior designer has got a view on decorative things, but not so much on the technical architectural lighting. So the integrator is in a good place to be able to pull that together and make sure that someone is thinking about it and planning it properly. And also because we understand the dimming and the controls side of it, we can be that one throat to choke, you know, like because otherwise you don't want to end up in this situation. I mean, dimming has got easier over the years, but 10 years ago, dimming LEDs was a real chore. And if you had a flickering LED, whose problem is it? And you get the guy who supplied the lighting pointing at the guy who supplied the control system, and the client was left in the middle with lights that don't work. Whereas now, we own the whole thing, and that works well for the client.
So, Vanessa, it's that decorative and technical blend really that makes this industry in a good position.
Well, with the decorative is always a bit different, I think, because again, we are lighting designers, we work with interior designers, and a lot of times they want to take control. That's our kind of fight, because the same way that you said, having the one calling you, like, site will always call us when it's light related, because we were the ones that done the lighting design. But a lot of times for the decorative side of things, it wasn't our decision. So a lot of times we even knew what was decided from the interior designer. So it's always trying to find that balance and kind of make sure that future proofing for, you know, say to the guys on site, maybe future proofings who, you know, whatever case will be. But for the other side, when we go as well to the commissioning, we always make sure that when it's just normal, not LED integrated, so just a lamp, we give them like options of what you can use that we tested, and we know that you won't dim weirdly or flicker or something like that. So it's basically keeping it.
So actually the question is really decorative and technical is a collaboration. It's not really one or the other necessarily. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Vanessa makes a good point about testing, maybe setting up test bench or whatever it might be, and working in collaboration between disciplines, or an integrator that can provide both disciplines, is quite pivotal, and ensuring that what's going to be deployed in the property is going to work off the bat and has been tested thoroughly and able to be deployed straight away.
So I think, James, most integrators in this room would probably say that they lead with, I don't know, music or audiovisual into a client as the first thing that they would be talking about, but would you say that that's the right way to go about a conversation?
It might, if that's what you're most comfortable talking about, then it probably is. But we now lead with lighting and have done for a few years now. And it's the thing that doesn't tend to get chopped out of a project. You know, there's when budgets get tight towards the end, speakers will disappear and big TVs will disappear and stuff. But the lighting stays more often than not, because both elements of the couple, is that the right term? Probably not. The husband and the wife both want it, typically. So it's something everyone wants their house to look beautiful. We find working on projects that have interior designers to be the best route for us, because if someone cares enough about their house to have an interior designer, also if they have an interior designer, it means they've got money and they listen to advice, which is a good fit for us. So.
And Vanessa, what would you say in terms of homeowner appreciation and the emotional impact that lighting can have in a home?
Yeah, we always say that lighting is not about the fitting, but about the feel that it generates on the person. We all have experience going to a restaurant and feel that is not quite right. I'm giving the restaurant, even though it's not residential, but not feeling quite right. And a lot of times is because of the lighting. So it kind of comes of making sure that we listen the same way that an interior designer would listen to the end client and understand what they want, the way they live the house and everything. The same thing goes for us. We need to understand, do they work from home? Do they have kids? understand all of these things in order to generate a lighting scheme that will work for the end user, for the family, for even if he's a single person, we need to understand everything and make sure that, you know, it's as seamless as well as it can be. We don't want to overcomplicate the life of the end user, as otherwise you'll not, you know, we'll want one button on the wall. That's it. I just want to turn them on and turn them off. Don't make it complicated. That's what we hear most of the time. Just like, don't make it complicated. There's a lot of emotion, because if it's your home, is always a lot of emotions generating in there of, are you sure it's going to be fine? Are you sure that it's not going to be too bright, too cold, too warm? So it's a lot of conversation. I think it's mainly have that conversation right from the bat with the end client and make sure that we have as much information as we can.
Excellent. Dan, here's an open goal. What role does great lighting play in making lighting control systems indispensable?
Thank you. So it's the layering of light. As great light, as we started to see better and better lighting schemes within homes, we started to have to layer light, basically. And therefore, what you would end up with is banks of dimmers or rotary switch, whatever it might be on the wall. By being able to take that, amalgamate it into one button push to recall the right ambience, scene, mood, whatever it might be, right light for the right task, it makes it indispensable, because you need it to create that mood every single time at single button push to control every layer of light, including obviously the number one light source on the planet, which is the sun. So being able to incorporate natural light into the overall lighting scheme as well.
And LIA, Dan, do you think that consumers really understand what good lighting can do?
Easy answer is no. I think that's half the challenge sometimes of when we talked about the importance of light designers, and we mentioned interior designers. Interior designers got to look at the aesthetic of the space. I think part of a light designer's job as well is the fitting choice, and that's important. Modularity, replaceability, repairability, are all the things that don't get considered, and an end user wouldn't necessarily. They're going to look at, you know, the end result. If you start trying to talk to someone about spectrum or various other things, or color shift, macadam ellipse, they're not really going to be that interested, and understandably so. But I think that's the role that a light design will play, to make sure color consistency, replaceability, repairability. There's no point creating a beautiful home and then 2 months in you have a failed fitting, you've got to cut the ceiling out and get a brand new light. It's not going to work for the end user. It's not going to work for the client. The installers are probably, I think, often the unsung heroes sometimes for some of these things. Of they're always the first port of call, and they need to understand what they've done, but we've got to make sure we've made the right choice for them, and not we've picked the best light and the best performance from a light design perspective. And I think where we mentioned different techniques and controls, that all adds in. So sensible layering of lighting, you've not gone in and you've put grazing in somewhere that it can't be removed, and then the grazing doesn't work, and then you've lost a layer already, but you've got to rip a wall out to re-put it in. We got to be sensible, and that's our profession, to be sensible.
And we talk a lot in our industry about experience, so I would imagine John Cullen have a pretty super duper showroom.
Yes.
Yeah, yes, which is a key part of that education, both to clients and to interior designers, yep. I'd imagine.
Yeah, we do. And I think that a lot of clients, that even some clients and clients and user, like the owner of the home, sometimes is a bit on the, you know, on the board of, should I get a lighting design or should I not? And we always invited them to our showroom, and we explain them and give them a brief of what, you know, lighting can do. And you can see what just a grid of lights will do. We do have what we call the pod. It's basically just a room, and we have like a grid of light, and then we have light layered like we normally do, and it's the same room, and you can feel the room just growing by showing them like proper lighting. And so it's always a lot of, and I think Lutron experience the same thing with your experience center. I had clients as well that I took to the Lutron experience center that were like, we don't want controls, no, it's a no for me. And I'm like, just give me, you know, half an hour of your day and let me go and show you. And a lot of them come out of them as wanting everything. So
I think that's really interesting, to show good lighting and bad lighting. Do you have that in your showroom?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we've got lots of different things. But one of the most powerful things we did was to put two vases with a Screwfix downlight, or not, other bad downlights are available. and a good quality downlight, and having the good and the bad next to each other, people can easily appreciate the difference because the two vases look vastly different. And if you have eyes, you can see the difference. And no one wants the cheap downlight after that. So that's helped us sell a lot of good quality lights, just that.
So anyone who's got a showroom here, you don't need to invest hundreds of thousands of pounds and get a really complicated lighting design to show it off.
You could do it with like 4 square feet. Yeah. And then other simple things like just showing how lighting the walls rather than lighting down the middle of the room makes a big difference, makes everything feel bigger. And with a, you know, a simple little lighting control keypad, you can just flick from one to the other and easily demonstrate why they need you involved.
So what are the core skills that you want to see from this industry in terms of being able to do basic lighting design to demonstrate to clients what they can do?
Yeah, I think it's a resourcing and an upskill piece and a education piece. So it is maybe engaging with the right governing bodies, so CEDIA as well as the likes of Dan at the end here at LIA, to better understand what lighting design entails. On the surface, it might seem quite simple, but that's when you end up with 20 spotlights stacked across the ceiling, right? So it's understanding the layering piece and really educating and upskilling themselves and taking exactly what James said about experience into their showrooms or into their show spaces to be able to, it's a motive, right? So it needs to be shown, to be sold and to be understood.
Do you want to say something on that, Dan?
Yeah, no, so I'm probably talking from a good place. I've just finished writing the latest lighting design course that we offer. So that's a free plug for anyone interested. I think it's a really important thing of, one, learning lighting design techniques is important, but fundamentally first, understanding lighting is normally the most important and really what you're getting. There's so many, I go too frank sometimes. There's a lot at the moment and everyone will see it with AI and like, hey, look, I've put this Porta Romana light in this room. Look how amazing it is. And you go, well, cool. And every lighting design looks and goes, yeah, that's wrong. That table light's not there. Learn the techniques. Then I think learn the software. So then learn how to design rooms, play around, understand what works, what doesn't, and then physically try it is the important things because, and you will definitely have had this as well, you can design something that looks so beautiful and you go, you know what, I'm patting myself on the back here. I couldn't do this better. And you go to site and goes, yeah, that looks awful. That doesn't work. Okay, right, how can I change this quick? But if you can get the techniques, the fundamental knowledge, and then learn how to apply it, I think that's the key thing, really.
And Vanessa, at what point does collaboration become a key thing for this audience, do you think?
I think from day one, really. You know, the sooner we do have all the stakeholders of a project talking together and understanding what everybody's doing, it's the key. You know, knowing the electrician, knowing the contractor, if we do have an AV company, whoever is on the project, the sooner they go all in communication and they're all talking with each other, the less problems you end up having at the end of the project. You know, if you just don't talk to the people that are actually installing or doing the programming, there's definitely going to be a lot bigger room for error than if you get them on board straight away.
James, can you speak to some of the CAD skills that you've learned and some of the other documentation skills that have been important for you as a business?
Yeah, I don't personally do CAD, I can't even barely open it up, but it's in a really important part of the whole process. The documentation is key. And also another thing that I think the integration community can bring to the world of lighting design is thinking about how it's going to physically fit together. So where drivers are going to live, for instance, that quite often lighting designers don't tend to think about, no offense, whereas in our world, we're very used to doing elevations of things and showing where the driver's going to go, where the wires are going to go, how much space that's going to need. And then we can give that to the design team, the interior designers or the cabinet maker or whatever, and say, for this room, we're going to put all the drivers here. And that helps make sure the electrician isn't left to his own devices and ends up shoving them underneath behind kit panels and kitchens, and that makes the servicing easier at the end as well. Or, you know, should a driver fail in a few years' time, you don't have to go ripping the place apart to find where the electrician put it. So that's something that I think our industry can do a great job of as well. But there's a lot of documentation, and also trying to keep the documentation as concise as possible. I've been guilty of making it more complicated than perhaps it needs to over the years by supplying too many pages. And you give the electrician a massive, thick tome, and and they don't end up looking.
They don't read it.
They don't read it. Yeah. So trying to keep it concise and easy to read is key.
And that, I think, is one of the big challenges then, that, again, our industry is probably thinking, yeah, I've got enough on my plate with the AV. Why do I want to get into lighting? Because the documentation is going to be like that, isn't it? Why should I want to take ownership of that?
Because it provides, it will, one, make you stickier to the project for a start. It will provide another source of revenue, being candid. Because you're defining or working with the professional team to define the control strategy anyway, and you're an experience-based sell, whether it is a cinema room or whatever you might be providing, distributed audio, lighting control. Lighting falls under the same category in terms of the design and how emotive it is. So you are very well placed to be able to hold those discussions and to move that or work on that packages alongside your AV and other pieces, as well as stuff James mentioned. So the design pieces as well, and being able to coordinate screens in tight spaces and all of that, it translates over to the lighting piece. So,
and I think it brings you into a different part of the conversation. You're part of the design team. You're no longer just the telly nerd. You're, you know, a valued part of the design team. And that mean it just sort of elevates you as when you're sitting around the table.
You mean our industry's got a bit of an identity crisis, whether they're contractors or design professionals?
Perhaps. I mean, for many years, yeah, I was just the AV guy, and people would never ask you any questions about, you know, where they should put artwork or, you know, things like that. But now we're, you know, we're regularly getting brought into those discussions, and it's a nicer place to be, really.
And you've nurtured that expertise at Homeplay. Identifying the skill sets within your people or recruiting people, what's different about them?
I think you've got to be creative. You've got to enjoy the creative side of it, and you have to be able to talk in the sort of flowery language, perhaps, that the design community does. And I love working with them because they help us to deliver better projects, really. As I say, I think a lot of our industry does try and keep them at arm's length because they're going to get in the way of us putting speakers where we want to. I think if we can embrace them and help them to deliver better homes for our mutual clients, then everyone will be better off for it.
What about the integrators you've worked with, Vanessa? What sort of skills stand out to you as the ones that you like working with?
I think it's the understanding of what we want to achieve with the lighting and try to help us mainly instead of become our enemy or against us. It's more like they are there trying to do exactly the same thing that we are doing and just pushing the same idea towards the client. Because sometimes it's, you know, even with certain clients, when you do are the lighting designer said, look, you should do it this way and you should use this control or you should use controls in general. And they think that it's us kind of upselling something. While if they have someone else that is not really related to lighting, but saying to them, oh, actually, you should, because, you know, this will make your life easier. It will give you all of this functionalities as well. And some of them, you know, depending on the client, will like, oh, okay, actually, they're not trying to, you know, just put another bill through the door, but actually they're trying to make this look as better as they can.
I'm interested in some of the vocabulary around lighting, and I wonder here, anybody, hands up if you know what layered lighting is or what they mean when they're talking layered. Yeah. Dan, do you want to explain for everybody else here?
Yeah, no problem. So I think it's an important thing when we talk about layering lighting, it's laying different techniques on top of each other. So you might start with some ambient lighting to start. So you're going to have your general lighting, you want some accent lighting. So you might be lighting pictures or features, walls. You then might want some additional accentuating lighting with some grays in. So that's where you have light sources close to a surface, so you can either have horizontal or vertical grazing, and then you slowly bring them together so that you get the word would normally three-dimensional. If a lighting designer doesn't say that about 20 times, I don't know, it really gives a nice 3D effect. So you're trying to build all the layers together, so individually they can be okay, but when they're together they don't. You have just ambient lighting, you often get what's called the cavern effect, which is where you'll get really dark scalloping on the top of walls, no one wants that, or you're 30 down lights in the ceiling, which again, it's just punching all the light down into your face. When you start layering the lighting, and this will work the same. So I said I come from a commercial, but it works the same residential of really of what the outcome is for the client. So if you've got young children, you probably want to be able for them to be able to see your face and you to clearly see their face. So if you just bang in a bunch of down lights and ambient light, you're not going to get that good horizontal or vertical illuminance, particularly here, to really show faces and model faces so that you can see things clearly. So when you lay a light and add all that in there, the techniques you get, so you get those effects.
Dan, that's kind of a conversation entirely about lighting, whereas I suspect that in our industry, it can be, well, we'll do the lighting or we'll do the lighting control. It's very simple, but I mean, I could have heard Dan talking for hours there, I think.
13-hour course on it.
And I think that goes back to my point earlier, right? It's if it's going to be adopted, it needs to be taken seriously, and there needs to be an education piece and an upskilling in order to be able to speak the same language as the guys to my right, as well as being able to do the other pieces as well.
Do you go on about lighting a lot now, James?
No, we do. It's a big thing that we talk about. So when someone's come to the showroom, we start with lighting. And then we show them, you know, talk to them about music and TVs and Wi-Fi and all that kind of thing. But it's the lighting that's leading the conversation, really. And we tend to try and steer people away from things like touch screens and stuff like that these days as well. Because I think in 2025, we're all a bit over touch screens. No one ever says to me, I want a complicated system. Everyone wants a simple system. Which is different to how it used to be, you know, 10, 15 years ago, people did come to us saying, I want everything automated and I want it. And now people have lived in houses that have had everything like that. They're kind of, I don't want that anymore. I just want a switch. And then we talk about, well, if you do just have a switch or a rotary dimmer, it's actually going to be more complicated. So you need a bit of complexity in the background to make that work.
Let's talk specifics then, Vanessa. What does a well thought through lighting design process look like from concept to completion?
Well, I guess that kind of segueing from what Dan was saying is having in attention those layers of, you know, layering the house, like I said before, knowing your end client, knowing, you know, how they live their homes or what they want to do in their homes. And then just from there, try to create something that has in consideration all of what we learn as lighting designers, you know, not doing loads of lights on the ceiling with the Swiss cheese. Nobody likes that. Doesn't work. Then it's basically just creating a nice environment again. I think we all keep saying the same thing, but it's like, is layering, like the I think the key word that we all going to leave out of here with is the layering. You know, if you do layer any lighting scheme and is very well considered, then you will have at least a decent lighting scheme, even if you don't know. But if you think, okay, I cannot just go from the ceiling, I had to have my floor lamps, my table lamps, my pendant, you know, if I have some joinery, I can put some light in there as well, you know, and creating all of those levels actually helps to balance the space and not just having one big spot of light in a particular area and everything else is darkness around. So it's just creating all of those little spots of light and all of that kind of coming together as a one piece rather than this area, that area kind of thing.
I'm interested in that, James. Do you take a different brief for the lighting than you would for the AV from a client?
Well, it's a separate meeting, yeah. You can't do it all in one meeting. It's just too much to think about. So, yeah, we absolutely have a separate lighting design or several. And we do treat it as a separate thing to the AV, yeah.
I mean, obviously, there's going to be some integration because a lot of these lighting control systems will be in the home cinema or media room environment, but there'll be places completely different within the house that will require lighting, but no AV, presumably.
Yeah, and as I say, it just gets a bit overwhelming to go to try and work through getting people thinking about speakers and TVs and where they might want to have light and artwork and whatever, all in one hit. So, you know, most people can sort of suffer through 2 hours of a design meeting and then after that they're spent. So it needs its own time.
And a common thing I've heard, Dan, is that the lighting designer, not John Cullen, but the lighting designer or the interior designer might think about the effects they want to create, the decorative fixtures they want to use, but not realise that that will then lead to 10 banks of switches on the wall necessarily. So at what point, again, with that collaboration that we're talking with, does that become really important in the conversation?
Yeah, I think as early as possible, you need to start moving towards or steering the conversation towards lighting control. Because, again, you can have this fantastic layered lighting scheme that is beautifully designed. But if you can't recreate the right ambience and the right mood, as I said earlier, every single time at a push of a button, then it's all gone to waste, right? So being able to combine the lighting control with the beautiful lighting design is where you get it. That's like the secret sauce, basically, and being able to recreate exactly what the client expected from the moment they put the keys through the door.
I'd imagine that's a, Dan, that's a slightly different conversation for a lighting designer that might be used to working in commercial practice, who then gets into a residential one and has no idea about that kind of thing.
I think that would be the challenge. So, you know, from a commercial perspective, you might do a place of worship or something where you could put in lots of different techniques at once. But I think the good thing with controls, particularly, is sometimes it can not limit a designer, but make a designer pick one. So someone mentioned a cinema room is a great example. If I work on that, you might say, right, I want to silhouette something so I can just see the outline of something that looks really pretty. I might backlight something and that'll create this really cool effect. I might uplight these two things here to create that. And then you put it all in, you go, oh, this is a bit bright. This doesn't quite work. Right, I only need to one. I have that on a set scene where I can dim it down. I can bring it back. So even when we're talking about layering it, it's creating different intensities as well. So it's not too much. So what effect you really want to get from that? And again, what the client really wants. But I think for us, we need controls to make that work. Otherwise, also representing light manufacturers, there's a lot of SKU numbers in lighting anyway. But yeah, if you started having to get a 200 lumen fit in, 300 lumen fit in, 400 lumen fit in, we need dimming. We need good control of dimming from the lights, but also from the control gear, so we're not getting flickering, shimmering, all the old problems that we used to get. So that integration is critical.
You're going to add something.
Yeah, well, just the SKUs. I wasn't sure if this was a separate topic. I can't remember, but the
SKUs.
The supplying fittings is complicated. You know, when you order a dimmer, it's like it's an LQSE4A done, whatever it is. But when it comes to ordering light fittings, it's just wildly complicated. There are so many permutations of part numbers. And if you get one wrong, and yes, we have had some horror stories over the years, that you can end up with, you know, 100 of the wrong thing you can't send back, you know, and also just managing that supply as well, because it's not you who's installing it typically, it's the electrician. So making sure that when you deliver to the electrician, that you allocate enough time to actually go through it with him, count everything out one by one, because if he calls you up in 3 weeks' time and says, oh, you didn't give me enough drivers or downlights or whatever it is, you'd be talking thousands of pounds worth of stuff. So you really need to be very procedural about how you hand over that stuff and the order in which it happens as well. You know, the plastering frames all going before the fittings, and then the drivers might come after that, and then the fittings come right at the last minute of the light engine. So it's just quite different to supplying ceiling speakers and tellies, and you shouldn't underestimate that and the amount of time and project management that's involved in it.
Any advice, Dan, on how integrators should deal with that?
Yeah, so it stems from the design. So I would say really coordinating with the rest of the disciplines, but also going to stages of detailed design where you're defining maybe bill of materials and not just having a design brief or similar approved or something like that, and really nailing it down for the client. Well, it allows you to define your SKUs a lot earlier in the process. So you're buying yourself time ultimately, right? But you're defining it so early that you know that's the scheme, that's what's going to be deployed. Within reason, changes might happen. Those considerations early on will also allow you time to then define what James is talking about, which is your procurement schedules. So you know when drivers need to be purchased and so on and so forth, and they need to be on site to be installed.
Vanessa, I'd imagine John Cullen know a lot about SKUs.
Obviously, being a manufacturer as well and supplying product, I can only speak from my experience and what we do at John Cullen, but we do actually have what we call a project partner that is basically the sales partner between the design team and the supply side of the company. That kind of is the person that ensures that everything is, you know, going out on time and is the like main contact for the contractor, for the electrician, that he basically said, look, we are ready, send us the product. So it's mainly because through so many years of working in this industry, you know, John Cullen as a company realized that there was a problem with this kind of communication between one end and the other. So we try to kind of cover that gap in there and try to make it as smooth as possible to go through. But yeah.
And what about site supervision? Revisions, they happen. So again, any strategies that integrators can use to deal with that, Dan?
So if I speak from my own experience with designs, my first role is always to be there on install. to start. Yeah. I think that is the most critical thing. Assumptions are always made. Everyone's under time pressures and constraints, as everyone is. And I think if we asked every single one of us, we could probably name two or three bad installs where you've rocked up first day or second day of install, you've looked and gone, oh, the lights are facing the wrong way. Oh, what have we done? And that will go from any type of installation. It's always the same. You've got to be there, because we'll always assume that someone can read a drawing. They'll know what they've got to do. We assume that they've got the drawing and they've not. Someone else hasn't got it. They've not subbed that out and something else. So fundamentally for me, stage one is always be there at the start. Like you said, having worked for a lighting manufacturer as well, of don't assume, label everything, label it to the drawing. But then when someone's there, making sure someone's going, you know where they're going. Right, that's right. You know how they fix. If you look at that, you got that right. Have I got that right as well? Because everyone's had that where you think you've got a seal in and you go there and go, oh, that's different. It's really being there and being involved from day one. Your job doesn't stop. Unfortunately, once you've done the design and you go, that's great, you're there to the end.
Anything else to add to that?
I mean, yeah, you could have five different fittings that look the same when they're in the ceiling, but they're all different, you know, beam angle typically. And unless the electrician has been talked through that these are all different beam angles, the chances of them ending up in the right place are zero. So, and it all look really wrong when you turn it all on. So educating the electrician and explain to him why it's important, because a lot of the time electricians that we're working with have never done this sort of thing before, and it is a real craft as well. They're, you know, mitering LED linear profiles is a skill that they may or may not have. A lot we've actually had it before where they're just not bothered with the profiles at all and just stuck the tape in, and you know, straight to the inside of the coffer or whatever, because it was, and then you ask, where's the profile? And they say, oh, I don't know, I haven't seen that in months. And it's all this sort of thing. You cannot expect that they're going to know all the things that you know. So you need to allow some time for training them and holding their hand through it and making sure they call when they've got a problem.
So we talked about collaboration with lighting designers, Dan, but collaboration with electricians, super important too.
100%, because ultimately they will be deploying the fixtures and fittings and lamps on site. So educating them and making sure they understand where the different SKUs or specific fixtures might need to go, even down to dimming protocols, for example, and ensuring that the wiring is correct is also an education piece that needs to be considered. And these trips and project management pieces need to be consistent to ensure that the cabling is right and that the right lights are going into the right places within the home. So absolutely, educating them and holding their hand along the way is pivotal.
Right, Dan, final question then. So what do you think are the key things that integrators need to make themselves aware of to be successful in lighting design?
Without going over the same things that I said before, learn some of the techniques, really start to understand lighting. I think that's the important thing. Don't get hung up on buzzwords. You know, there's so many things that people will talk about, and it's like if I put an analogy to a car, people look at the cars and they've got all these functions, but they haven't actually picked what size engine they want, which is, generally speaking, going to be your most important thing when you drive a car. And it's the same sometimes in lighting design. They want full circadian, this, and you go, right, okay, but what's that mean? Are you doing that with colour, intensity, spectrum? I don't know. So get yourself familiar, a bit like a house. Start with the groundwork and builder. Learn the techniques. Learn the software. Invest time in lighting. There is so many free resources as well as paid resources and training to really develop your lighting knowledge and skills and treat it like a separate discipline.
To be honest, I wouldn't add much more to what Dan just said. Yeah, it's basically not try to go. I think you pointed out like people using AI nowadays and it becomes a bit dangerous. And you pointed out very well that you see a render is not exactly what it should look like because, you know, AI does what they want. Get your basics, you know, learn, understand even the small keywords that you will hear everywhere, like CRIs, this and that. So you understand what people are telling you and understand the value or the lack of it when you are working with a product or not. So you understand that, okay, I can do a cutout in here, but this is what will kind of materialize if I do that. So it's basically learning all of those small little things and then go from there.
Yeah, I think it's been explained very well. But I would also just add, if you're going to commit to it, take it seriously and treat it as a separate discipline. Don't run before you can walk. Trying to take on massive, huge residential schemes. Take it seriously, become educated in it, learn the nuance, what a real lighting designer has to produce and go through in order to create these great schemes.
For you, James, I just want to ask a business question. Have you made money out of lighting design?
Yeah. Over the, we've lost a lot of money as well. But on, in the grand scheme of things, well, no, we have, like, because it's expensive when you screw up. But we overall, it's been a net positive as a business for sure. But I can't stress. Don't underestimate the project management, procurement, delivery side of it. It's a different thing.
And can you charge for design in writing in a way that you can for AV as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, we started off for a good while just saying, look, if you buy the fittings from us, we'll do the design for free. Like we started when I started selling speakers 30 years ago. But now, you know, we offer a better service. We're more confident. We can look someone in the eye and tell them we can deliver value for money from a paid lighting design. But it's a long road, though. Yeah.
Go into it with your eyes open.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you all for sharing those insights with us today, and thanks to Cedia for hosting us at the Tech and Business Summit as well. You can find out more about the Integrated Home Podcast on Instagram at Integrated Home Podcast and on LinkedIn at The Integrated Home Podcast. The Integrated Home supports Together for Cinema. We are a Wildwood Plus production.
The Integrated Home supports Together for Cinema. Together for Cinema is a community interest company that collaborates with the AV industry to design and install cinema rooms in children's hospices and other deserving locations across the UK. So far, thanks to the huge generosity of manufacturers, distributors and integrators freely giving of their time, products and expertise, we've created 46 dedicated cinemas, equivalent to an installation value of about £1.2 million. In these special places, families, staff and volunteers are now enjoying fantastic movie experiences together and helping to create very, very special memories. Help our industry continue to make a difference. Visit togetherforcinema.co.uk and find out how you can be involved to make short lives just that little bit better.